Welcome to the Fourth and Goal Fantasy Podcast with your hosts, Nick Sykes and Jimbo Donahue.
Football is here, everyone. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Welcome back, everyone. It's us, your favorite podcast.
Nick and Jim here, starting off the 2020 season. It is officially week one, folks. We never thought we would get here.
And welcome to the first episode of this season of the Fourth and Goal Fantasy Podcast.
It's great to be back. Today, what we're going to be providing for you guys is just... So basically, me and Jimbo are going to break down pretty much every position and give you a few players. Each of us are going to be pretty high on this year. They could be ranging anywhere from kind of your top draft picks to kind of maybe some sleepers, but just guys we're believing in for this season.
Yeah, basically guys that we're willing to put all of our chips in no matter what.
Yep, on these players. Awesome. Oh, I can't believe football's in 2 days or one day.
I know, I can't believe it either. After everything we've been through throughout this year.
I know, we didn't even think we were going to have a season at one point.
And look at us now.
All right, so starting off with the quarterbacks, I'll start us off, Jimbo.
Excellent.
So this quarterback, someone very close to me and Jimbo's heart, it's Tom Brady.
Ah, yes. The old Sarah Padre alumni.
Yes. For people who, listeners who don't know, Tom Brady went to our high school, so we've been fans of him forever. Tom Brady was graduating our high school the year I was born.
Crazy how time flies.
So let me give you a quick little case for Tom Brady. I feel like it shouldn't be too hard to talk up the GOAT.
I hope not.
But I will anyways. So this season coming in, the Buccaneers have the number one ranked receiving core according to Pro Football Focus. We have Chris Godwin, Mike Evans. We have Gronk coming back, but Gronk is not alone. He also has OJ Howard and Cameron Brate, who have had a role in the offense, and they do catch touchdowns.
Yeah, the depth is actually unreal at every position, including the running back position as well.
I know. I was telling Jimbo this analogy before, but it's basically when Tom had Christmas in New England, it's basically when Christmas comes, a.k.a. draft day, Tom's basically opening up a present, and what's he getting? He's getting socks and a pack of underwear. Well, thanks, Mom. This Christmas, when he's coming over here to the Buccaneers, you know, Christmas, you know, Tom has a shiny new iPad in Chris Godwin, you know, a PS5 in Mike Evans. You're like, you know what, Tom, maybe you need Ronald Jones ain't going to cut it for us. You know, maybe we need some veteran leadership in the backfield. You know, let's sign Shady McCoy. Let's give Tom a nice Xbox, whatever the new thing is called.
Yeah, that should be enough.
You know, but then, you know, like they really want to make sure Tom feels loved this Christmas because they're really making up for a couple decades of Tom getting shafted. So they went out and they bought Tom a brand new iMac in Leonard Fournette.
Wow. Just when you think they couldn't upgrade at any other position, they still were able to do that.
And they still have a great defense. Tampa Bay Buccaneers have a lot of dogs on defense, like Devin White. They have a pretty decent D-line. And they're going to be poised and ready to make a playoff run. But more so about fantasy. You know, I talked about how this receiving core and this offense is amazing. Last year in 2019, Pro Football Focus rated the Patriots wide receiving core as the 31st ranked receiving core. Never, ever getting open, no separation. And still with all that garbage going on, Tom threw for 4,000 yards and was the number 12 fantasy quarterback last year.
That's absolutely unbelievable.
Absolutely absurd. This is going to be the best offense Brady has played with since 2007 with Randy Moss. And you, for me personally, I'm getting any piece of this offense I can.
Yeah, I think... Yeah, you just mentioned that this is the best offense that Brady's been in, but I think you can make an argument that this is the best offense that anyone has ever played in. I cannot Whoa. Find a hole at all anywhere.
True. And they have a good O-line. They backed up Tom, made sure they drafted a lot of good O-line pieces. All right, Jimbo, let's hear one of your picks for quarterback.
All right. Well, when I was looking over these players, I wanted to choose a player that I think – can pretty much help you win games as soon as the season starts. And I truly believe that's going to be Mr. Matt Stafford. And I think the biggest reason is because he no longer has a broken back. That's a huge, huge factor. He's entering this season extremely healthy. And when he was healthy last year, he was averaging 36 passing attempts, 313 passing yards, and 2 touchdowns a game. And that was in 8 games played last year. But the crazy thing was that the last 3 games of those 8, he was averaging 370 yards and 3 touchdowns. That type of performance set him on pace to have a 5,000-yard career passing and 338 touchdowns over the course of 16-game season. So I think Matt Stafford's going to pick right up where he left off, especially with him being healthy.
Yeah, that's the big thing. If he can stay healthy, I think Stafford's a good week-to-week starter for sure. And all right, my next pick, you know, Tom left New England. This next pick, many people may see as controversial, but I've decided to go on the side of believing.
Very interesting.
I'm talking about Cam Newton, folks. Now, I don't think the Patriots are going to be good this year. I don't think they're a playoff contender.
Right.
And there's a lot of evidence even out there to accuse that the team is even soft tanking this year. And I'll get into that another day. That's not for this episode. But just because a team's bad doesn't mean they can't have fantasy relevant pieces. But, Nick, didn't you just say how they had the worst receiving core ever? I'm like, yes, I did. But we have to remember in fantasy football, any quarterback that runs the ball has an innate value that's really hard to match. I mean, we look at people in the likes of, you know, Kyler Murray. We look at people like Carson Wentz, Josh Allen.
Right.
Guys who run the ball. It just adds a whole nother dimension, a whole nother layer to their stats that just really propels them. Like Josh Allen last year barely threw the ball. He was in QB4 last year due to his running. And let's take a trip down memory lane here. In 2018, Cam's last full season, he had 3,300 yards passing, 24 touchdowns, and 13 interceptions. And that's not even including his 500 rushing yards and 4 touchdowns as well. And honestly, if Cam looks healthy, there's been nothing but praise from Belichick for like the past like 3 or 4 weeks. It's been insane.
Yeah, he's been very positive.
Cam's been named a starter of this team. He is the best player on this team. And if anything's going to get done, it's going to be through Cam. I'm buying into the hype. There's a reason Cam's average draft position has gone up exponentially this past month. And it's because people are really buying into this hype and believing in Cam. This is probably the hardest he's ever worked in his career. He's the first one in. People don't even, N'Keal Harry even says he's never seen Cam leave the freaking facility.
That's insane. That's what you like to see. That's the type of dedication and the hard work that you like to see from your leader.
Yeah. And typically at the end of drafts, I typically like to draft Cam, but he's going early now. He's going in the like anywhere from the 10th to 12th round. People are reaching on him now. So he's not as a great value as he was once earlier in this offseason, but if you can grab Cam, it's a great pick.
Which, yeah, those rounds, you can still set up a super solid foundation and still wait on Cam in the 10 or 12th round. Yep. So that's good. I like that pick, Nick.
All right, Jimbo. You have even a more controversial pick for yours.
I do. I was about to say that this might be the hardest pick for you as listeners to get on board with, but just hear me out for a second. So this next pick is going to be Mr. Baker Mayfield, and the reason why I'm choosing Baker Mayfield is because I think he's going to bounce back especially harder than he was last year because of the new coaching staff, the new coaching facility. And just to dive into that a little bit, Freddie Kitchens is no longer there cooking up plays for them. The new head coach is going to be Mr. Kevin Stefanski, who's a former Vikings offensive coordinator. And in 2019, Stefanski was brought into Minnesota to relieve a lot of the pressure that Kirk Cousins was facing from opposing pass rushers, which is precisely what he did. In 2018, the Vikings ranked 4th in the league in pass attempts and 27th in run plays. The following year, when Stefanski arrived, however, the Vikings assembled a more balanced offense, producing 466 passing plays and 476 passing plays. So as a result, the Vikings finished the 2019 season with a 10-6 record as opposed to the 8-7-1 record they finished in 2018. I think it's going to be really essential to establish the run with arguably one of the best backfields in football, and I think that's going to create more opportunities for play action, plays, deep shots, and relieve a lot of the pressure that Baker was under last season. Last year with Stefanski as head coach, Kirk Cousins led the league in play action touchdown passes with 19, and I expect to see Baker Mayfield to have a similar number. Not only that, but like their additions to the offensive line, they signed veteran right tackle Jack Conklin and drafted Jedrick Wills Jr. with the 10th overall pick. I see nothing but positive things happening for Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, and another thing to notice too in this offseason, you notice that Baker has been quiet.
Right.
It last offseason, very loud, very outspoken, calling out training staff. Like, he was just a freaking mess. He came out and said this offseason, you know, like, my head's been in the wrong place. I haven't been focusing on what I need to focus on, and now I'm all in on focusing on football, my career, getting better. And I think he is dedicated not only to save his career because of the new management within Cleveland, but I think he also is trying to redeem the career of like someone like OBJ,
right,
someone he targeted last year, and just it was such a dud year for them. And he wants to make this amazing Cleveland offense work. So I do like I want to buy into Baker as well, and I'm buying into Cleveland too.
Me as well.
All right, moving on to running backs now. I'll start with my high pick. So I feel like I don't have to talk a lot of people into loving this man, but I think I love him to another level. It's Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the LSU rookie running back from the Championship Tigers. So let me name some names for you guys right now. We have Brian Westbrook, Jamal Charles, Kareem Hunt, and now the successor is Clyde Edwards-Helaire. All amazing running backs of the NFL who have been coached by Andy Reid. Not to mention LeSean McCoy in his prime as well. And Andy Reid just has a great eye for these amazing bell cow backs. You know how he likes to use them. And if you're wondering about Clyde Edwards-Helaire's production in college, it is insane. His last year, he was a three-down back for the championship LSU Tigers, totaling over 1,700 yards and 17 touchdowns in 15 games.
Ooh, I just got chills.
He had a 10% target share in that offense that Joe Burrow was passing nonstop. He's literally the most versatile back the Chiefs can use this year, and I think he's going to be – I mean, there's been talk that Andy Reid's even said this might be the best running back he's ever coached. I am drafting this man before Derrick Henry, before Alvin Kamara, before Josh Jacobs, before Nick Chubb, before Miles Sanders. I have Clyde Edwards-Helaire as my RB4. I have him behind CMC, Saquon, and Zeke. And then right there, I have Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I'm buying into the hype, and I'm very excited to have this guy in all my leagues.
Dude, that's a great pick. I think we're all super excited to see what he does. And it seems like no matter what starting running back it is for the Kansas City Chiefs, they always seem to produce and at just a very high level. So I love that pick.
Thank you. Who do you got, Jimbo?
So my next two picks, well, we'll go back and forth, but one of my picks is someone that you also might be hard, or it might be hard for me to convince you, but let me just give it a shot. Mr. David Johnson. Look, we all know that DJ now has all the opportunity in the world in his new offense. However, there are a lot of red flags. But before we get into those, let me just talk him up a little bit. The first thing we need to address is that there is no one that's fighting for his job. Duke Johnson, I'm not afraid. I'm definitely not afraid of Duke Johnson taking David Johnson's job, even though they have the same initials. But yes, the offensive line in Houston is pretty bad. But Carlos Hyde, who was a starting running back for them last year, who is not there anymore. He's with the Seattle Seahawks. Still somehow managed to average 4.4 yards per carry and average 70 rushing yards a game. And he, not to mention, collected 1,000 yards on the ground. So the reason why this excites me is because I consider David Johnson to be infinitely more talented than Carlos Hyde, and I really hope you guys do as well. With that being said, when he was healthy last year, DJ was averaging 52.5 receiving yards a game in the Arizona offense. If you pair that production that we saw on the ground from Hyde, which, by the way, I believe DJ can build on and improve on, with his pass catching ability, I think he has the potential to being an RB1. Do I advise you drafting him that early as an RB1? No, I don't. But I still think DJ has that potential.
Yeah, I typically when I'm drafting, I go very running back heavy early in these drafts. I think this draft in terms of fantasy, has been one of the deepest wide receiver drafts I've ever seen.
I agree.
And I think there's such a sharp cutoff. Once you get off the tier, like once you get after about like David Johnson, Todd Gurley, you know, those kind of like second, third round guys, there's such a sharp drop off that when you don't draft running backs early, it's just like, who the hell are you going to be picking later in the draft? Like,
right, exactly. You know what I mean? Yeah. No, I think this would be the perfect pick, your second round pick, if, especially if you're at the very back end of the draft. You can go ahead and maybe go after Clyde Edwards-Helaire if he's still there with your first round, and then come back around and take David Johnson. I think that would be a perfect 1-2 punch.
Or even, I've even mocked where I've gotten David Johnson as my RB3. But let's be real, everyone's already drafted, so we're just trying to talk up the guys that might be on your team. So the next guy I'm talking about is, I'm guessing a lot of people probably drafted over like probably the last 2 weeks. Typically National Draft Day is like around August 24th every year. So Leonard Fournette, you know, he was dropped from the Jaguars. You knew what kind of production he was getting, but it was a terrible situation. The Jags are purposely kind of throwing this year away, trading away all their pieces, not signing anybody, and really trying to get probably Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields next year. So what does Fournette look like on the Bucs? Well, I have a direct quote from this morning from head coach Bruce Arians that Leonard Fournette will have a solid role in week one against the Saints. He's a bright guy, and he picked it up quickly today. Says, obviously, he can't do everything, but it'll be situational. But the fact that Leonard Fournette has already been considered to have a solid role in the offense.
As soon as he steps
into
Tampa
Bay. He's been there a freaking week, for crying out loud. Now, people say, you know, Leonard Fournette, he's slow. You know, he's a big guy. Maybe he doesn't work hard. And
he needs a lot of attempts to get going.
Yeah, but I think a lot of people don't actually freaking know Leonard Fournette. No one can say Leonard Fournette doesn't work hard. You don't know Leonard Fournette.
Right.
But what a lot of the haters do get right, yeah, he's big. He's 240 pounds. Leonard Fournette is the biggest pass-catching receiver. And you know, last year, he had 100 targets last year. 100 targets as a running back. I don't think people understand that, like, if wide receivers exceed over 100 targets, like, it's a pretty decent season. This man was doing it as a running back, on top of getting over 20 carries a game. And, you know, don't be sold on this Ronald Jones' Rojo hype. You know, everyone's drafting him the seventh round, and now he was going in the fifth. And like, oh, I got some great value. You know, in year two last year, Ronald Jones saw a 37% snap share and couldn't beat out Peyton Barber for the starting job. I don't think Ronald Jones is the answer in this offense. Leonard Fournette has a 96% speed score. He can catch the ball. He can run defenses down. I mean, it's just a matter of time before Leonard Fournette takes over this Bucs offense.
Yeah, I mean, he's an absolute workhorse. And I think that Shady McCoy, there's a lot of things that you have to worry about there. And like you said, Ronald Jones is not something that excites an offense. It's not a running back that you can build around. So I love that pick.
And typically, you know, Fournette was going around the third when he was on the Jags. Obviously, I hope to God that you held him. And, you know, after the trade, in most proper leagues, he was going around like the fifth or sixth round. I did a draft tonight in ESPN, and he was going in the 10th round ESPN. Can you believe that?
No, I can't. That
ESPN, Matthew Berry, your system sucks.
That's the steal of the draft right there.
It's ridiculous. Disrespectful, Leonard Fournette goes in the 10th round. But if you got him in like the third or the sixth, wherever you may be very happy he's on your team and get ready. Get locked and loaded. You know, it may not be the production went right out of the gate, but it's coming.
And again, like, the offensive line was improved on that team, so nothing but good things coming from Leonard Fournette. Okay, our last pick at the running back position is going to be my favorite player in the entire draft. That's right. It's going to be Mr. Miles Sanders. Last year, Sanders averaged 95 rushing yards, 5 yards per rushing attempt, 53 receiving yards, and saw at least 5 targets a game when he rushed the ball at least 15 times. The crazy thing about his season last year is that he went on to record 818 rushing yards and hauled in 500 receiving yards over the course of his first NFL career, which he only started 11 games. The last rookie to do that was Saquon Barkley. And by that, I mean at least 800 rushing yards and at least 500 receiving yards. But the thing is, Saquon started all 16 games of his rookie season. But before that, the last rookie to do that was in 1999. Some guy by the name of Edgerrin James. I'm not sure who that is. But there's only been 7 rookies in NFL history that have been able to do that. And the fact that Miles Sanders was able to do that, only starting 11 games, kind of gives you a sneak peek into his potential. I think his ceiling is having the ability to single-handedly win people their championships. But some worry that's been coming out of camp is, or at least the reason why he's dropping a little bit, is because people are worried about his health. But a few days ago, when the 53-man roster was finalized, we saw that the Eagles cut 3 running backs, leaving them with only 3 on the roster. So in my opinion, that's a strong indication that Sanders is fully healthy and ready to go for Week 1.
Yeah, Boston Scott's not going to take any Miles Sanders carries. There's no more Jordan Howard.
Yeah, or Corey Clement. Those are 2 people I don't really worry about taking away Miles Sanders and his potential.
Not at all. All right, let's move over to wide receiver now. The first guy I'm going to be talking about is probably one of the players I'm most high on this season, and Scary Terry McLaurin of the Washington football team. The breakout's coming, ladies and gentlemen. I could lay out all the stats and the projections of when receivers break out, and typically it is going to be in their second year after they received a decent workload their rookie year. Scary Terry, he is locked and loaded. Last season as a rookie, he had 3 different quarterbacks on one of the worst teams in football. What did he do with it? He had 58 receptions, 919 yards, 7 touchdowns, and 93 targets. Less than Leonard Fournette, which is still funny. He was the 10th rookie ever to average over 9 yards per target over his over the past 10 seasons. You know who was asking Scary Terry for route running advice this offseason, Jimbo?
I do know, but I want you to say it.
Yes. Odell Beckham Jr. reached out to Scary Terry for route running advice because he was so impressed by Terry's performance. And if you have OBJ reaching out for you for help, for advice, I think you're in the right spot. Terry McLaurin is obviously, his numbers are by far the best in the Washington offense. He's the best part of that. He is old college teammates with Dwayne Haskins, who is going to be the start of this season. And I think with another offseason, with more time to work with Dwayne and this offense with Ron Rivera at head coach, Terry McLaurin is going to break out this year.
I couldn't agree with you more. All right, moving on to our next pick. This is a fan favorite for both of us, is Mr. Robert Woods. So during weeks 1 through 5, and if you had Robert Woods, then you might have been slightly disappointed. But one thing that people need to notice is that during weeks 1 through 5, he was still averaging 10 targets a game. Fast forward to weeks 10 through 17, he was still averaging not just 10 targets, but 11 targets a game and averaging 95 receiving yards, which was putting him on pace to receive 1,500 receiving yards over the course of a 16-game season. Not to mention, I think Robert Woods is due for positive touchdown regression, and I think he has now become one of... It's kind of 1A and 1B when it comes to Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp. You can be fully confident that not just one of them, but both of them are going to get their targets. And I think Robert Woods is going to keep up the target share.
Right. And now with Brandon Cooks kind of out of the picture, you have Josh Reynolds kind of filling in here and there, but he's not really a threat. Robert Woods had like 2 or 3 touchdowns last season. You know, typically how you like to rank touchdowns is usually for every 100 yards a receiver gets, you expect him to at least get 1 touchdown. Robert Woods was such an outlier last season in terms of touchdown production. I think you expect higher numbers this year that are more consistent with his career.
I agree.
All right. My second guy is Hot Lockett, Tyler Lockett. Before week 10 last year, Tyler Lockett was the wide receiver 4 in football. In week 10, he was hospitalized and for like a contusion to his quad, I believe, and was basically immobile for like the next 2 to 3 games of the season. I mean, he was still like suiting up for those games, but he was struggling with that injury. He still managed to finish the year as a wide receiver 14, recovering from that horrific leg contusion. He finished last year with 110 targets, 82 receptions, over 1,000 yards, and 8 touchdowns. The passer rating between Russell Wilson to Tyler Lockett is freaking absurd. It is near perfect. Tyler Lockett is always slept on, and people forget how freaking incredible this guy is and how he makes contested catches. He consistently, out of the slot, gets 3.3 yards of separation from when he comes out of the slot. That is among the highest in the NFL. It's top 10. So draft Tyler Lockett.
I think it's kind of a similar situation here. It's a 1A, 1B situation in Seattle as well. Yeah, people can make an argument, well, yeah, DK Metcalf is about to go off, but it's a situation where Russell Wilson needs every offensive weapon that he can when he's scrambling, and I think that creates plenty of opportunities for everyone in that offense.
Right, I agree. And, I mean, you saw DK produce the first half season with Tyler Lockett. I mean, the offensive and defensive lines of Seattle are trash, bottom tier of the league, and really, Russ carries a team with the scrambling, and that just creates more opportunities for these receivers. So, Tyler Lockett, if you got him, get really excited for this year.
All right. This last wide receiver pick is quite the stinky situation, wouldn't you say, Nick?
One could say after today, he is the true number two in Cleveland, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I know what you mean, but we're not going to talk about it on this show. That's right, folks, Mr. OBJ. I guess I'm a big fan of the Cleveland Browns this year, Nick. Moving on to Mr. OBJ, despite the tough season he had last year, the good news is that OBJ saw a total of 133 targets in 2019, which is more than Devontae Parker, Chris Godwin, Mike Evans, Kenny Golladay, DJ Chark, and Amari Cooper. And it also equates to a 24.7% target share, which is really substantial. Was it as substantial as New York? No, it wasn't. But it's still enough for him to have a productive season. So what was the problem then? Well, the biggest problem was that he was dealing with a core injury. It's a weird core muscle injury. Nick's the doctor. I'm not. I'm just a scientist. In training camp.
A social scientist, Jimbo.
Yes, yes. Don't cut myself short. Anyways, he was dealing with a core muscle injury in training camp last season, and it lingered throughout the entire year. So all I know is that DeSean Jackson had a much serious version of this injury, and he had to stay out almost the entire season. So it wasn't as severe as OBJ's. DeSean Jackson, I think his core muscle completely came off the bone, but OBJ was dealing with a minor form of it, and it's something that really, really affects your running capabilities. You're in a lot of pain when you do that. OBJ, good news is that January he had surgery in order to correct the situation, and there's words out of camp saying that he's completely healthy. Something that's also super positive to see was that the offensive coordinator of the Cleveland Browns has already come out with a statement saying that we are going to give Odell and those receivers as many chances as we need to in order for them to make big plays. So this kind of goes with my argument of Baker Mayfield with this new offensive coordinator and the new leadership and the improved offensive line. I think everyone in this offense is going to have a much, much more substantial year.
I agree. And the offensive line is a selling point for me. And Baker maturing as well. This is kind of a contract year for Baker, you could say. So moving on to tight ends, we're each going to choose one tight end. I know it's not the most glamorous and fun position.
We'll make it through.
But we're not going to pick anyone in the top four. So the big four, or even the big five, are, you know, Kelce, your Kittle, your Mark Andrews, your Darren Wallers, and Zach Ertz. Those guys are usually typically shoe-ins of good production. But a breakout candidate I have this year is going to be Hayden Hurst, who the Falcons traded a second-round pick for. You know, with the departures of Austin Hooper, Devontae Freeman, Mohamed Sanu, Justin Hardy, and Kenyon Barner, there are 243 vacant targets in Atlanta, and that is 16 targets per game. Hurst should be getting the Hooper workload, which looks like a 16% target share and around 8 targets per game, which is within the upper echelon of tight end kind of target share. And, you know, Matt Ryan, you look at his history, you know, who has he been like to throw to? Oh, you know, Hall of Famer Tony Gonzalez. Oh, you know, tight end one Austin Hooper for the past few years. It's no joke. We understand how Matt Ryan likes to play football. I mean, he's not afraid of throwing the tight end, and his tight ends typically are top tier. This is going to be the breakout year for Hayden Hurst. We have the revamped O-line for Matt Ryan, so he's going to have more time to throw. You always know the Falcons are going to be in shootouts, and it's just a great, perfect situation for a tight end breakout.
I agree. That's a great pick, Nick.
Thanks.
Another tight end pick that you can eye late in the drafts is Mr. Tyler Higbee. Now, during weeks... During weeks 12 through 17, which... and the reason why I choose those weeks is because that was pretty much last year when he pretty much became the full-time starter due to an injury of Gerald Everett. Anyways, Higbee in that time frame managed to put up top five numbers at the tight end position. On a per-game basis, he averaged 10.3 targets, 8 receptions, 90 receiving yards, and 11.29 yards per reception, and maintained a 77.4% catch percentage. To put things into perspective, George Kittle managed in that time frame to only receive 8 targets a game, only 6 receptions a game, and only maintain his 76 receiving, only averaged 76 receiving yards in that time frame. So, like I said, he was putting up numbers that were comparable, if not better, than the top tight ends in the league during that time. Not to mention, during those same games, Jared Goff was averaging 40 more yards and throwing for a higher completion percentage than he had been all season. Well, you might say, James, what about these wide receivers you were talking about in that offense? Well, Jared Goff passes the ball almost more than anyone else in this entire league. Not to mention, we don't really know what the running back situation is going to look like in this offense. So I expect not only the wide receivers to have plenty of targets, but also Higbee to have plenty of targets in this offense.
I believe Higbee is one of the only tight ends in NFL history to have 4 straight 100-yard games. So if you're in that type of category with that type of production, you got to be excited. I'm not scared of Myles Everett in that offense. He's basically diminished to none from what it sounds like, but I'm a full believer in Higbee.
Right, absolutely. And you just can't ignore what he did last year. It's not like Everett's going to come into this offense and then, oh, okay, now we're going to share time with both of you. No, Higbee left his mark in this offense, and he's definitely here to stay.
Awesome. Well, that is going to be our main pick for the season. These are the guys we are believing in this season, the guys we're coming out and saying we fully support them. That way, when they do pop off during the season, you can either flame us or point to us and say, wow, these guys are really smart.
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully we're going to be smarter than we are not. And also, these could be guys that you can definitely go out and trade for, too, if you don't feel confident in certain pieces in your offense.
Very true, very true. All right, everyone, it's great to be back. Thanks again, everyone, for listening. Once again, you can find us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And tomorrow we're going to be back with our first and ever matchup show. I can't believe it. It's finally happening.
It's here.
Welcome to 2020, everyone, and we'll see you tomorrow.